I can remember thinking about real estate and thinking about investment properties and just wondering how on earth are people able to buy multiple? I can only have one income with one mortgage. How does that work? And that was probably my thoughts on the matter for the longest time. And let me explain to you exactly how it's done. It's a lot easier than you think that it is. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Finance Diaries podcast. My name is Stephanie and I'm here to teach you everything there's to know about personal finances. Whether it's the stuff that you didn't learn in school, that your friends and family don't really tend to talk about, quite frankly, we can sometimes say that finances are treated like they're a secret, locked away in a secret diary even. I'm here to unlock and open up that secret diary for you, and that is why I welcome you to another episode of the Finance Diaries podcast. Hello. I'm going to start with a few updates I think that potentially relevant to talk about. So you may or may not be aware if you've listened to my previous podcast that I am in the process of buying my fourth and fifth doors. So this week was really exciting. I signed for it. I wish I could just get the keys when I sign for it. It's probably just something that's different in the process of where I'm at in Nova Scotia, because I remember when I was a real estate broker in Quebec, it was kind of like the signing and the key transfer happened simultaneously. Like you would start, like everything was in your name as of the day that you signed pretty much. And it was really written in the purchase contract. So you would say either that you were buying and taking ownership as of the signing date or as of a specific date. So to me, it just completely throws me off kilter that we're doing things not together at a notary, but that instead we're each going to our own separate lawyers and that it happens later. Anyways, to me, completely throws me off. I wish they would have just given me the keys. I signed so much paperwork. And I guess because like I've gotten to the level that I'm at a few properties, it is more and more paperwork than previously. So the process for financing was also more difficult and longer, which is why exactly I was thinking about how I felt like, let's say 10 years ago, before real estate investing was even a blip on the radar for me, and how exactly I would come to this point that I'm basically have more mortgages than my personal salary income. Because obviously I have other sources of income now, and how exactly that works. Because maybe you don't want to be a real estate investor, but maybe you just want to know more about it. I always talk about the importance in personal finances of staying curious. Just because you don't want to be something or do something, like I don't want to necessarily, because I always bring up this example, I do not have an interest in drop shipping. But do I want to learn about it and do I want to understand more about it? Of course, because information is so valuable to understand. And maybe one day, by staying informed, my opinion will end up changing. And I'll say, you know what? I do want to get into dropshipping. So that is why I think it's important to always stay informed. But for the rest of you, I do know, I think it's really important. I think it's something like 90% of millionaires are investing in real estate, which is crazy. That doesn't mean like, so by investing, we'll start with the basics. Investing in real estate doesn't mean buying your home, because that is not an investment. Your principal residence, unfortunately, unless you're house hacking, it's not an investment. So if you're buying a standalone home or a condo or something and you're planning on living in it and not renting it out, then that is not in fact an asset. It is just an expense, because you can't write off anything with regards to that property, like unless you're using it as a home office or whatever. But at the basis, principal residence is not an investment, unfortunately. So anyways, let's talk about how exactly I went from having my first property to having five, and how exactly not only I got there, but how others do it as well. So if you were to go, let's say, buy a principal residence, let's say you were buying a condo, you were buying a house, whatever it is that you're going to buy, and you went to a mortgage broker and you said, I want to buy a house or a property, how much can I afford? They would give you a pre-approval, they would lock in your rate for 90 days. I mean, this obviously depends on where you live, but I'm talking about my process that I've been through. And they'll tell you, okay, your salary from work is this, these are your paychecks. These are your expenses. So let's say I have a car payment, I have student debt payments, I have credit card, whatever. They have a formula that they will use your income, your expenses, and then, I mean, mortgage brokers, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's something around 30% should be your home costs. So they will tell you, you can afford a house or a property of, like, let's say $400,000 plus whatever you have as a down payment. Now, the down payment varies greatly, how much you need to put down depending on where you live. So I don't want to give any answers on that because I know that there are some, like, veterans loans in the US that you can put zero down. There's FHA loans for 3.5%. In Canada, it's 5%, but it depends on the price of the property. So plus whatever your down payment is, you need to meet a certain threshold. So they would tell you, okay, this is what you can go out and buy. However, if you change the scenario around and you went to a mortgage broker and you said, I want to buy an investment property, tell me what I can afford. Oh, they will tell you, well, my friend, that depends. They won't tell you just a blanket allowance that you have, because in that case, what also happens is that the income that you will be generating from the rental property will be factored into the equation. So before, when we were just going to look to buy a house or a condo, they would look at our overall salary that usually typically you have from your job or from commissions or contract work or your self-employment income, whatever that is. But in this case, it's not only taking that income into consideration, but it's also taking the income of the property into consideration. Now, again, this varies greatly depending on where you live, on your jurisdiction, because I know even Quebec was different from Nova Scotia, and Canada is different from the US, and the US and Canada are different from Australia and the UK, where I also have a lot of listeners from. I also have a lot of listeners from South Korea. So if you're listening from South Korea, Australia, any of these locations, thank you so much for listening to my podcast from across the world, because these concepts, they can apply to everyone. I know in Israel, you have to put down like at least 20 or 25% of a property. So all these things can vary greatly. But when you're buying an income property, these numbers change. So that's why when I went to go see my mortgage broker and I said, what can I afford? That's what I was told. And then as I learned more, it really depends on so many factors. So for example, I brought forward a property. When I learned all of this, I brought forward a property and I said, can I afford this property? This is the asking price. These are the numbers. This is the property tax. These are the expenses. These are the current rents. And what happened here was that if that property had been given to me vacant versus given to me, well, sold, not given, sold to me vacant versus someone who's paying market rent versus someone who's paying way under market rent, these are three different kinds of scenarios where the answer can vary. So as someone who is looking to buy an investment property, probably one of the easiest ways to go about it is either buying at market rent, but then that brings the price up a lot, or buying a place that is not yet rented and that you're planning on turning into a rental. Alternatively, something that people do is that they'll outgrow their first home or have a change of whatever circumstance, like they're growing their family, they're moving across country, they decide they don't want to live in that specific place anymore. Maybe they want to be in a building with amenities, and they'll turn that residence that they had that was once a principal residence into an income property. So that is one of the ways that we are able to afford something that is more than just a principal residence. I hope you're with me. If you're not, I would love to answer your questions, because these are things that we should be aware of and understand. So maybe I'll skip into the second part and hopefully this will clarify things a bit more for you. So the way that it works when we are looking at a property is that we want to look at all the different costs that are relating to it. So in order to buy a property and for me to think that it's a good deal, it's not just, is the rent more than the mortgage? As I mentioned before, it's important that you have something that's beyond that. So let's say I'm buying an income property. Where I am, if I'm buying an income property, I need to put down 20%. So 20% down payment, I'm buying this income property. I have my mortgage payment on the remaining 80%. Unless I do some sort of creative financing, there's also a lot of options for that. And there's a lot of different podcasts on mortgages that you can listen to. But let's say that's the example. Well, is my mortgage plus my property taxes plus whatever expenses I need to pay relating to the property. So maybe there's like an HOA or condo fee, need to factor in maintenance. So usually what we do is we take about 1% of the purchase price per year for maintenance, but that can be higher or lower depending on if it's a condo, depending on if it's an older or newer building, all these different things. And then also taking into account vacancy. So those are just the initial things that you need to think of. But after that, are you able to make a profit? And if you are, then that's something that you might want to look into. Now, the way that I've gone into getting more properties is that when I applied, well, for my most recent purchase, for my fourth and fifth doors, which is a duplex, I'm actually moving into it. So that was the first thing that was great, was because I'm moving into it and I never used my 5% down that we're allowed to use in Canada. Like it's an insured CMHC loan. So basically I'm going to live there. And because of that, because it's a duplex, I'm still allowed to put 5% down, which is just incredible. So with this 5% down, I'm moving in and I have someone who's going to be living in the secondary unit who's going to be covering most of the mortgage. So when I drew up these numbers, I said, okay, this is going to be the mortgage payment. Now, this is what the tenant is going to be paying, and it's going to cost me to live there, like, I don't know, something like $700 a month between me and my partner, which is absolutely nothing, right? So you can be like, that is a form of house hacking technically, because house hacking is when someone is paying expenses towards, like, you're essentially renting out part of your property so that it is subsidizing your costs of living there. So a full house hack would be that they're paying so much that I end up living entirely for free, which is what I was doing at the beach house. But that's not going to be the case at this new place because it's really like right in the city. It's in like a trendy area. And compared to the rent in that area, I'm paying substantially less than I would if I was just renting a unit. So that's why I decided to go this avenue rather than just deciding to become a renter somewhere in that trendy area. So when I went to the lender, I said, okay, these are the numbers. This is what I'm paying for it. This is how much I want to pay on my mortgage, like with the 5% down. This is the property tax bill, and this is the average rent that is in the area. So then what happened, what the lender did, was that the lender had to look at everything else I have. So the lender had to go and look at my condo that I have and run a fair market rental report on that. And even though I don't know why that, honestly, personally do not understand why that was really necessary, because it was currently rented for over a year and I had an annual lease. But anyways, they did that. They did the same thing on my other two properties on the ocean. That was like a lovely little $900 bill I got, but you know what? It was necessary. And they validated, okay, these rents are legitimate and these rents more than cover the mortgage, the condo fees, the property taxes. And beyond that, what happened is that I think you're all familiar with the term cash flow. So cash flow means that the amount of money that I'm receiving is higher than all of the expenses relating to the property. So everything I just mentioned, mortgage, condo fees, property taxes, and such that I needed to pay. So because of this, this added on to my personal income. This meant that my income that I get from my job was brought even higher because I had this cash flow coming from these properties. So that, mixed with the fact that this new property would be more than paying for itself, if I rented it out entirely, hypothetically, or if I just moved into it, then that is how I qualified for another mortgage. I remember thinking that there's no way I would ever feel comfortable having more mortgage expenses than my monthly salary. I said, you know, if ever anything happened, at least with the three properties I have, if none of them were rented, I would still be able to cover the costs. And then as I grew and as I realized that that didn't really align with what I wanted to do, I wanted to keep growing and I wanted to keep buying more properties. Now, do I want to have 100 units? I really don't think that's in my interest. I mean, I can't speak for the future because apparently I used to say that I didn't want to do what I'm doing now. But at this time, I honestly just want to have these units and potentially buy a business. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. All that to say is that, okay, hypothetically speaking, I have these properties. They're essentially all paying for themselves. So I mentioned before about the $700. Well, the $700 that I'm technically paying, I'm cash flowing from my other units. So in the end, I do end up house hacking and I do end up living for free. I get to live in whichever one of these units that I want to live in. It's funny because I'm going from the least expensive unit to technically, yes. Well, with the cost of mortgage interest, no, actually, I guess technically not the most expensive unit. But that is how I went from having one unit to having a second unit to having a third unit to having a fourth and a fifth unit. So I hope that that is relatively clear. There are other ways that you can do this as well. So I mentioned earlier that you can have your residence that you decide, okay, I'm going to rent this out. So I mentioned just before fair market rent. Let's say you live, this happens all the time, especially in the US, because in the US you lock in interest rates for the entire life of your mortgage. So if you locked in a mortgage at 2% for 30 years, it's not really necessarily in your best interest to sell that property and that lose that rate and then to go buy something else, right? So in that case, what a lot of people are doing in the real estate groups that I follow is that they're deciding, okay, we're moving across to another state, but we're going to keep that house, turn it into a rental unit, and either buy something or rent something elsewhere. So what they're doing is that they're going to be doing exactly what I did with the fair market rent. So they'll say, okay, hi, mortgage broker. I have this house. This is the mortgage payment on it. And this is the property taxes. And these are the condo fees or HOA or whatever. And I'm going to be renting it for fair market rent, which is X. And with that, I want to go buy a new house in this other state. Now, can you tell me how much I can afford? So this is a bit different because here they're doing the opposite. Instead of buying an investment, they're turning their existing unit into an investment and then buying a home, primary home. And this is a common thing as well. So in that case, it will be the exact same thing. So the lender will then look at what exactly is fair market, might make you do a fair market rental report, and then determine, okay, yes, that is in fact covering the expenses. You will have your down payment for some other property, or maybe you are even looking to get a bit creative and refinancing. Well, actually, I guess you wouldn't refinance in that case because you don't want to lose your interest rate. You pull a second mortgage. Don't get stuff just because I told you to. Look into it. Ask your lender to give you a few different options. Look into it. Get some advice from multiple people. Do your research. But let's say you have this other down payment, you buy something else, and then you get this new interest rate that's like sky high, and then going from there and turning the equation. So turning your primary into an investment opportunity and then getting your new primary residence in a different market. So that is how you can go from having one property to having two. So when I first started, my very first property that I bought, I really wanted to make sure that the numbers worked on it because I knew it would become a rental property. You might be listening to this thinking, well, you know, I bought my first home and that's what I have right now. And I don't see how I could do that. So if you haven't bought yet, obviously be mindful of what would be the rental potential for your house. And if you are, I mean, that's a whole separate discussion, but you shouldn't be buying something that's going to cost you a lot more than you could rent it for, because that doesn't necessarily make sense. You can't expect something to appreciate. We hope that it will, but it won't necessarily. And there's a lot of costs associated to being a homeowner as well. But let's say that you did buy a property, or you already have your primary residence. Well, how can it become a rental property if it ever came to that? I think it's always good to have different exit strategies, because I always think like what if I had to move for work? What if I had to move home for whatever reason and leave this province? And always setting things up so that I have like an exit plan. And whether you plan to be in your house forever or not, it's always still good to have this, because there's always like, I guess in French we say les imprévus, like the unplanned can always happen. And it's always good to have this rather than scramble if something does happen that you needed to move or leave or whatever it is. So some things that we can do with our residences to just be ready for this kind of thing is that one of the things that you can do that I think is always like a great recommendation is see if you can turn part of your house into a secondary suite. A lot of people have basements or unused space in their yard or something like that that they don't use. And that's actually a great way to get into your first income property. It's been suggested to me by mortgage brokers before and real estate brokers, is like getting a house and turning if a part of it into a unit. So one of the units I was actually looking at was it already had this. So it was a two-story house with a basement, and the basement was an income suite. And I went to the city and I found out that it legally could be turned into three units. So the setup of it was the staircase going upstairs was going right to the front of the house. It would have been really easy to make another entrance right there and to just close off that wall and make it like two separate units. And I ended up just not really aligning with the price that they wanted, but that would have been a great opportunity to turn what it was essentially a really large house with a small secondary unit into a unit that would have, like, the whole rental would have paid for itself if I lived in it. So I still would have gotten a four-bedroom house because it was really quite big, and had two sets of tenants paying for the whole house. So that's another way too, that if you are currently a homeowner, that you could always look to pivot and to make secondary units. I know right now in Canada, there are some sort of incentives to building secondary units because of our lack of supply in housing. Is that, I don't quote me on it, you'll have to look it up, but I did see that they were giving up to $50,000 on the conversion of a secondary suite. I think it was on a tax credit. I don't think it was like money back, but look into it. Look into different programs that there might be that exist to do these kinds of things, because they could always help you offset your mortgage, even if you're not looking at necessarily becoming a landlord. It's always just nice if you're helping someone else pay the bills, but at the same time, you're creating more housing. You're hopefully creating nice, safe, clean housing for people to live in, maybe people arriving in Canada, students, families that don't otherwise necessarily have the opportunity to have nice housing, because, I mean, if it's anything like it is in Nova Scotia, it's very hard to find good housing at an affordable price. So all of that was to explain to you how exactly you could get into a real estate deal, turn it into more than one real estate deal, and whether you want to do this or not. These are just some options of things that we are always learning and staying just on top of what is going on, how are people doing things, and staying curious all the time. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of The Finance Diaries. I'm so thankful for all your likes, follows, shares, comments. I absolutely have my heart warmed by them, and I'm so glad that you feel like this is helpful, because that is the commentary that I've been getting, is that you feel like this helps, and that is literally what I'm doing this for. I don't make money from this podcast. I'm doing it quite literally just because I like helping you all learn more and staying curious, and that is something that is so important to me. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, all of that. Love to see it. Love to help you. And I love to be helped by you as well. I find the Instagram page in particular is a really good environment for us all to be answering each other's questions, sometimes my own questions, sometimes your questions, and sometimes just a Q&A. So if you are not following me on Instagram, feel free to do that as well at The Finance Diaries. Thank you so much and have a great week ahead.